Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm Sam Legasic.
And I'm Dreadful Dan Gallagher. And we're two old buddies that have lived our life at the edge of the mainstream.
So come join us where things are a little odd.
This is the Podcast.
You've got to believe.
It's alive. It's loose.
This earth of yours will be reduced to a burned out cinder.
Welcome to Oddcast, Movies, Music and Gaming. And here with me, Sam, is Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hey, how are you doing?
Yes, good, thank you. And today, I'm not going to ask you how you are, because today we're going to do a hit and a shit. That's right, we're going to be doing a hit and a shit, where we each take a hit and we take a shit song of a subject or a band, and we smush them together and we talk about it. So
that's mad, like some kind of deranged scientist.
Yeah. Well, no, and this is what might come out the other end.
Like a human caterpillar of music.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows what will happen? But today's subject is tears for fears. Tears for Fears. We had this with some other subjects and band stuff as well, where there is a point where it is very difficult to pick a hit and a shit with bands and artists that we love so much and so dear. I have to say that I found choosing the shit slightly difficult, but not as difficult as choosing the hit.
Likewise, there are some amazing songs in the band's catalogue that I know we both love. We did an episode, didn't we, last year, specifically on The Hurting.
Yes.
And so, you know, that is real rich ground for hit gold. But in regards to shit, there's actually quite a lot. The Seeds of Love, which has some great songs on it, is where I think things start to go a bit wrong for them. That quite sort of big produced sound starts to yield some quite cheesy naff songs.
Yeah.
So even as early as that, there's some shit. To be honest, even I think maybe there might be one or two on songs from The Big Chair, but as well, some of their B-sides, quite experimental. Some of those to me, and normally I love B-sides, but even some of those early B-sides, I'm like, bloody hell. And then, obviously, after Kurt left, there's some ropey stuff.
Yeah.
There's some good stuff, but there's some ropey stuff. And especially Fertile Ground, everything since they reformed.
Mm.
So there's a whole spectrum from which to choose something shitty. And that, for me, that was hard. I'm like, where am I going to put my shit chip?
Yeah, I kind of felt the same. I think, to be honest, I did delve into the latter stuff for both hits and shits. And to be fair, and I think I've had this when we've been talking about other artists as well, I've kind of looked back on it with a lot more favour than probably what I did originally. And I looked at, because when they kind of, if you want to say reformed, when they started doing covers of other songs and all this stuff, like some of those I thought, like Ready to Start wasn't great and all this, and I was like, oh, but it's like, again, it's not really one of their tracks, it's not really that fair. So for me, I've kind of taken it from the main body of work, as it were. And I guess like my hit was really, you might think that I'm cheating, actually, I suppose a little bit. I think by saying that you might have already guessed what it is, but my hit was very difficult to choose from. But then I think, what do I get the most excited about when I listen to it? And there's a lot that I do. But I think I know what I've chosen, because it changed a lot. I've got about three different ones here.
Okay.
I think I'm going to go. My shit, however, it might be a bit unfair, to be honest. I don't know. Why don't we start with one of yours? Because I feel like we've started a lot with me.
Okay. I'm going to get it over with. Let's go with the hit. Oh. It's a perennial classic. No,
shit.
Let's just
get it out the way.
Let's get out. I say get out of the way. Less for the listeners, more for you and I, because I know it's a song we both love and we both know very well. So it's quite a pedestrian choice, really. But I want to kick off with The Hurting. I remember us trying to like harmonize on this when we were about 16.
It must have been quite it's the treat for the neighbors, my parents.
We spoke about this when we did the episode on its parents' album, The Hurting. Mm-hmm. I think it's just such a great opening track.
Yeah.
Arguably, there are stronger tracks on the album, but I feel like they're all a bit better known, obviously, like the big singles. I think this could have nicely been a single itself, probably deserved to be. It's got all the elements of what makes the early Tears for Fears so great. Really as well, like, you know, emotional kind of vocal and lyrics. Really great like interplay between the two. Vocals going on, like one going high, one going low. Nice sort of like mid-paced as well. Really great synth sound.
Mm-hmm.
Nice bit of like some acoustic guitar in there as well. Whimsical, sad, but it's also like incredibly hooky.
Yeah.
And that rush you get when they hit that big like...
It's an
dream. It's like jubilant suddenly. So yeah, it's a bit of an emotional roller coaster, and it just feels so good.
Yeah, totally. It's yeah, I mean, people can go back and listen to our whole in-depth analysis of that album, but it's a great track. It's a great hit. So it's a very good, strong choice. Yeah, I mean, I love everything about it. Same as what you said, basically. I love It's a Bit Weird. It's also, for people that didn't know, it's the they used the drum beat from this and slowed it down and used it for Do They Know It's Christmas Time?
Oh, yeah, I remember you.
little known fact there
for
you.
Yeah.
Feel free to tell your friends. but yeah, it's got every, it sums up, and we said this at the time, it sums up Tears of Fears perfectly in the fact that it is horribly dark and depressing, yet jubilant, as you were saying. It's got the vocal, like, harmony weirdness that they do often, which works. Clearly, like, the powerhouse of them two. Great synth sounds, great bass lines, genuinely a great track. So it's a strong hit, I would say.
Nice. And if you're listening, because you sort of like casually are aware of Tears for Fears, then probably you know stuff from songs from The Big Chair and maybe Seeds of Love. And maybe you know Mad World, which is on that first album. And if you like the Mad World sound, then yeah. I think we both are in agreement that that is the strongest album.
Yeah.
This early synth pop stuff. So yeah, get stuck in.
Yeah, check it out. And it feels like each track is different and yet not. But yeah, I love it. Okay, well, I go to my hit. My hit was, as I was saying, very tough to choose. And I did kind of like, I did jump around a bit, but I just always kept coming back to the same thing. And it's a bit of a cheat because essentially it's from Songs from the Big Chair. It is broken, but part of why I love Broken so much is because it goes into Head Over Heels and then comes back to Broken, which is Broken Revisited. So for me, I'm saying, yeah, for me, it's
the whole suite.
All, yeah, exactly. It's all kind of three songs as one experience. And for me, that's a hit. And it's also probably one of the most famous Tears of Fears tracks, especially with Donnie Darko and stuff. But let's have a listen. So, yeah, I don't know. Is it cheating? A little bit. I mean, like, the reason why I love Broken, it's a cool, like, dark bass line. It feels like, I don't know, like, there's just something, it's kind of like an energy and a vibe to it. And then you got the bit of singing at the end. Like, as you were saying, you know, with other bands and stuff, sometimes when it's just having just that instrumental for ages.
Yeah.
And then when the vocals come in, it just adds a bit of oomph that... you know, that wasn't maybe would have been limited had the vocals not come in earlier or whatever. And
yeah,
then
we've
got Head Over Heels, which is one of my favorite Tears of Fears songs. And again, it's a classic Tears of Fears pop song. And it's got that, you know, they're all together at the end kind of chanting, and it's all a bit, still a little bit sad, but jubilant. It's got a great, you know, great melody to it and everything. And then the way that just filters right back into Broken, and it's got that powerful, like, fuck you kind of bass going on.
Yeah.
And then weirdly it ends with like a crowd, which I think has just been inserted in. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I was gonna ask you about that, because that Broken, the final bit does sound live. And then it's got the roar of the crowd, but I think it's been artificially treated to sound like that.
Yeah, I don't,
it definitely sounds different to the first instance of Broken.
Yeah.
Doesn't it? Like, sonically, it sounds different.
Yeah. I want to say it's Fake, but I don't know. I can't remember. And then, I mean, like, to be fair, that then rides into Listen, which is very 80s and very, like, panpipe kind of, like, easy listening. But I genuinely enjoy that as well. But for me, it's a bit of a cheat, but Broken / Head Over Heels / Broken is my kind of fit.
It's my favourite set of songs on Songs from the Big Chair. I love it.
Mm.
Yeah, I love how, like, Broken, it just starts and it's so dark and mysterious and cool.
Mm. Yeah,
it's got that swagger. It's also, like, probably the most guitar-heavy track on the album, probably... Another reason why I kind of like it.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a leftover. It was a B-side from the first album, simply called We Are Broken. Mm. And he obviously then thought, okay, there's more in this. And I love that he must have then worked on that. Obviously, like, the gestation for this album was famously very long.
Yeah.
They were working on... someone said, like, oh... Was it, I can't remember now, one of the producers. What's his name? Ian Smith?
Okay, I can't remember their names, but yeah.
Ian Stanley? Not Ian Smith, Ian Stanley. He said, like, oh, I went away for a year and came back and they were still, like, working on the same the same track. But it feels like, basically, like, Roland's given himself time in the studio to, like, break that down, find out what it is about We Are Broken that he likes,
yeah,
and then, like, flog it like a dead horse. And he's obviously come up with a better, more dynamic, exciting version of Broken. But out of that also, he's managed to construct Head Over Heels out of the same chords.
Yeah.
And there must have been a moment, I think, like, as an artist, where he went, oh, which way am I going to go? Which direction am I going to go with this song? And he's obviously thought, fuck it, this is so good, I want to have both. And I'll piece them together as this kind of sweet.
Yeah.
And it just works brilliantly.
Yeah, it does. Like, there's an element, and I always forget this, especially with Tears of Fears, and because, like, you know, they came when we were kids. They were still super young doing this stuff. Mm-hmm. And it always, like, it's exactly from what you were saying, when I listen to stuff like this, I'm just like, it's pure talent. It's, you know, it's brilliant. It's having the freedom to kind of work with that talent as well. And you get fucking great stuff like this. It's absolutely one of my hits. I specifically remember when I really started getting into Tears for Fears and put Songs in the Big Chair on, and obviously it began with Shout, and I'm like, I know this one. And I remember when it got to Broken, I was just like, what the fuck is this? Like, this is amazing. And then going into Head Over Heels, then back into Broken, I remember the feeling. I don't necessarily remember the time, but I still get, like, almost goosebumps or whatever, like, when I hear it, because it was just, like, so, it made such an impression on me. It's just being, like, especially when you'd kind of heard Head Over Heels before as well. Like, you didn't even know that this Broken song was, like, around it. Like,
yeah.
At all.
Yeah. So, yeah, because we would have heard Head Over Heels as the single.
Yeah. Exactly. And the fact that there's this whole fucking cool song surrounding it.
Yeah. I imagine the first time I heard Broken, I was probably like, hang on, that's the bit from Head Over Heels. What's going on?
Yeah, exactly. Where's this going? I know where this is going. So, that's my hit.
Head Over Heels, we haven't really spoken about in too much depth here, but there's so much going on additional to just, like, the skeleton of Broken. Mm. I really love that vocal, where he, like, goes really high.
Mm.
Like, I wanted to be with you alone. Like,
yeah.
Fantastic. What about the music video too? I always thought that was really cool. In the library. And it's, like, really cool. You'll know how it was done. Like, the way the camera's kind of, like, following him, and he's kind of, like, sweeping up. I think he must be on some kind of little
platform,
like riser or something.
Yeah.
And the camera's coming with him, like, all around the library. Mm. I always thought that was amazing. I'd never seen that done before.
Right. I vaguely remember it, but Yeah, I just really remember that it was in the library for the most part.
There's a funny bit as well when it gets to the keyboard solo, and he plays it with one finger, looking like really, really lazy, and like he's got really like loads of attitude.
Brilliant.
Ian Stanley, the keyboard player, like, he's like got his leather jacket on. He just looks at the camera like, it's a really weird look he gives to the camera. Like, I can't be bothered, but I'm also quite smug about it. And just like plays it with one finger. It's really cool. And there's a chimpanzee. What the hell's that chimpanzee doing there? Yeah. I really like the music video. Check it out. There's a smoking hot woman in it too. So that never hurts.
God, you've got a good memory for this stuff. I told you when, because a lot of people, this was the song in Donnie Darko where it's like going down the hallways of the school and it's kind of floating along. And for a lot of people, that was amazing. And I told you when I met Richard, well, the director, basically, because that's his first film. Oh my God, I should know his name. That's awful. But the guy who directed Donnie Darko, and did a little piece for BBC World, a little like profile piece, and went to like his house, met his parents, and we're talking about the film and all this stuff. Richard Kelly, that's it. And he was talking about Virginia and all this stuff, where he lives, Richmond, and everything. And I remember like when we were just standing there chatting, waiting for someone to get the car to us or whatever. And I was like, you know, it's weird because it's like at that point in time, I really loved Tears of Fears and they weren't cool. It was, you know, it's strange because of everything that's happened since. But I honestly, until I saw Donnie Darko, I thought I was the only person in the world basically that liked Tears of Fears. Obviously excluding you, Dan, you know what I mean? I'm saying it for effect. And he literally was just like, yeah. I was like, cool.
That's all he gave you.
Well, yeah, I was thinking that we were going to go into this whole like fucking conversation about like Tears of Fears, and he'd be like, yeah, you know, I really love them, or but I was doing this and whatever. And he's just like, yeah, like whatever. And I was thinking, oh, maybe he didn't choose the songs. I don't know. Maybe he's not a Tears of Fears fan.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Maybe it's or like he was like, I don't know, like they
forced to use it.
Yeah, exactly. They showed me some tracks and I picked this one and it just was Tears of Fears. But yeah, I remember specifically watching that film going, fuck, you don't see Tears of Fears in a movie before, especially with such prominence.
Yeah.
And especially like with something that's not like Everybody Wants to Rule the World or something.
Yeah, For a lot of people, it's one of the most memorable sequences of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, and there's other Tears of Fears in it, if I remember rightly. Obviously Mad World. And,
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Yeah, and it's weird, and he's just like, yeah, whatever. So it's like, okay, fuck.
That's a disappointing moment.
Yeah, it was really disappointing because I thought I was going to geek out over some Tears of Fear. He's a bit of a moody guy anyway. He's quite funny because it's like, I was asking him about Jake Gyllenhaal as well. It's like, are you still friends with him? Still talk to him? He's like, yeah, yeah, we talk every now and then. But it made it sound like they don't really.
And the fact that you weren't able to geek out at that point, you repressed that. And that's the reason why we have to do this.
What do you mean?
If he'd given you that little bit of time to have that conversation.
Geek out over it. I see.
But you've held on to it for 20 years.
Yeah, it's true.
You know what? And it erupted into Oddcast.
Yeah, exactly. One thing I do remember about Richard Kelly, right, is that he had very tight t-shirts on, but he just worked his arms. So he had like muscular arms. Everything else was really skinny and he just looked weird. Do you know when it's like people do like what's called like the show muscles or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like he's a very small person. He's a very small guy. Just arms, pure arms. And he's very like monotonous and like just looks like moody and emo or something. Just weird. His family, lovely. Like classic white picket fence, American kind of family. Live in a big, nice house. All very sweet, all super proud of him, as you would be, like, you know, making that kind of film. But yeah, not to take away from Richard Kelly, because he was a really nice guy. But yeah, it was quite funny. So he actually as well got me in touch. I'm just name dropping here for the sake of it. He got me in touch with, he said, oh, you should chat to Eli. He'd like to do something like this. And it's like, okay, cool. Eli Roth, he's talking about.
Right.
And I was like, great, okay. You know, he's a big name. People know who he is. I went to the and then me and Eli Roth were swapping emails. He's like, I'd really love to do it. I think in Boston, I think it was where he's from. I really love to do it in Boston and give a little do the and I could show you some places here. And I'm like, okay, that's cool. And we had like this little cool little to and fro. And then I went to the BBC and was like, okay, cool. We've got Eli Roth as well if we want him. And they were like, no.
Oh.
And I was like, what do you mean, no? Like, he's a fairly, you know, big name. And they were like, yeah. No, he does like torture porn. They didn't say that. That's what they're insinuating. And I was like, yeah, but he's done other stuff. He's a horror director. Like,
yeah,
you know, we're just not having horror directors on. And I had to fucking email Eli Roth and basically say the BBC don't want you.
Wow.
And he was fucked off. He didn't reply or anything back to me after that. So clearly that upset him.
You can invite him onto the Oddcast and make amends.
Yeah, I wish I could. He's busy
rebuild
doing,
that bridge.
He's doing the Borderlands movie. Borderlands is a well-known game franchise.
The game, yeah.
Making that with Sigourney Weaver, I think, randomly. Maybe I've made that up. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah,
let's
People want to hear the nerdy detail about Broken.
Yeah,
because I've just been doing some reading.
Eli Roth. Right, go on.
apparently, that is genuinely a live recording of Broken.
Oh, it is? Okay.
Do you know, it was recorded at a concert that was also filmed. Let me double check.
I'm just guessing.
Yes. Hammersmith Odeon, which was our favourite in my mind's eye, that VHS.
Oh, right. Okay, oh, fucking hell.
Which, so yeah, Sam doesn't like it. I love it. It's the most 80s thing ever. It's, like the presentation.
It's someone's just found a whole host of transitions. Yeah. So it's all like the screen is like a floating square, but it's like all the time. So you're just like, just hold the shot, stop moving it. And it will go into like 4 screen, 8 screen, 16 screen. And then it'll suddenly zoom out and zoom in. It's just constant. You're just like, what is it doing? It's fucking up the whole thing. Show me the concert.
That's great.
That's infuriating.
I'm going to go back and check that out, though. So if you listen to the version of Broken on that video, apparently it is the version that's on the album. So I'm going to test that.
Okay.
I'm going to test that. Did you know that Head Over Heels was released as a four-leaf clover-shaped picture disc?
Oh, God. Right,
this is my four-leaf clover. Mm. Do you know what was on the B-side?
Don't know.
My Shit.
My Shit?
My Shit was on the B-side.
What? Are you talking about?
I'm segueing.
What do you mean?
Segueing into playing My Shit.
Oh,
my Shit
so there's not a track called My Shit.
Neither did I take a copy of the single and defecate on it.
That's the two things I was thinking. My head didn't go there automatically. My shit, it's not the B-side. I've never heard that Tears of Fear track. It's such a random title for a B-side for like a massive pop song.
That's a perfectly constructed link, Sam. I was being a professional podcaster.
Sorry. Okay, your shit track was the B-side. And what is it?
When in Love with a Blind Man.
We've all had that problem. Let's have a listen. It's that other Tears of Fear track, basically. It's the same melody.
It's The Working Hour. It's a strange peek into a world where The Working Hour, and by extrapolation, the whole of Songs from the Big Chair, could have been complete and utter shit.
Right.
This is an earlier version, apparently, of The Working Hour. So presumably they had a go at this and then realised it wasn't working, discarded it, and rolled up their sleeves and got on with crafting a masterpiece.
Yeah.
But then I guess they were kind of like, well, we need stuff to put on the B-sides of these singles. Oh, do you remember that thing we did? Didn't really work, did it? Let's put it on. I think their B-sides around this time are quite disappointing. It's always, some people might say, oh, it's interesting because it's like quite experimental. Mm. But I always think it's like stuff that hasn't worked. And often it's like really slight or kind of like undercooked.
Right.
And I think this is like one of the worst examples of that. I really hate how like the vocal melody follows the main melody.
Yeah.
I hate the lyrics.
Yeah.
I remember telling you about this song when I first got a copy of Head Over Heels. Because
right.
This is before, obviously, I think this is before like reissues on CD and stuff. So we wouldn't have had a copy of this, you know, and this is before streaming and everything. So I think I finally got hold of like the single 7-inch and like played it. And I was telling you about it, and you were like, "In Love with a Blind Man." That sounds shit. It's just a shit title,
yeah.
And all this stuff like "Make Love to the Man," like the vocal. It's like the worst example of like them doing kind of like a really small, like fawning kind of vocal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like all that kind of fey stuff. But with none of them, like, I like it when they temper that within like the big overblown vocals as well.
Yeah.
This is just like small and thin and weedy and reedy and whiny. And it just doesn't go anywhere and just annoying.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm in two minds in the sense of I still like the melody of what's going on behind it, which is obviously Smoking Hour then. But yeah, as you said, it's just an awful version thereof. I can understand why shit. Like, why would you ever listen to this, basically? Why would anyone choose to spend their time listening to this when they could just listen to Working Out?
Yeah. I find it offensively bad, though.
Yeah, well, you bloody would, wouldn't you?
have you got something worse for me?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, to be fair, it's from this same time.
Okay.
So all my stuff, hits and shits, are from Songs in the Big Chair.
Okay.
And my shit is The Big Chair.
Chair.
on the same page here, because this is exactly what I was talking about.
Mm.
These B-sides from this album particularly, this is a great example of one of these ones where it's like he's just trying stuff out.
Yeah.
But it hasn't even gelled into anything resembling a song.
No. I mean, it does different things. That's why I'm a little bit in two minds about it. Because one thing, as far as experimental stuff goes, I don't mind it as much as some things that are experimental.
Yeah.
But I find it quite torturous to listen to. Yeah. More so than what would be deemed worse stuff. There's just nothing in it, really. There's nothing in it for me. It just feels like very throwaway. There's part of me, and I think it's my brain just trying to reach, basically, where I'm like, as a tonal piece, it could work in a sense if it sounds quite dark and horrific. And kind of like what we were talking about Silent Hill, like there's an element of doesn't feel quite right, and there's certain sounds and noises that make it you feel slightly disturbed or whatever, uncomfortable, I should say.
Yeah.
And there's an element of that to it. But yeah, I just listened to it going, I just think it just sounds like someone fucking about, basically. And as you said, trying to get it as a B-side, just a bit of content or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
And it's weird as well. It's like songs from the big chair. So there's an element here where it's like, it's called this track, The Big Chair. So it's the idea that this is the experiment, and like in some kind of weird Lynchian fashion, everything else has been drawn from this initial kind of thought experiment almost. I like the idea of that. Whether that's the case, I don't think is true. But yeah, it's not for me.
One of the things that's interesting about these songs as well is that all of them say, like this one, The Big Chair, underproduced by Ian Stanley. And some of the other ones just say not produced.
Okay.
Which I think is probably like Roland's sense of humour. Of actually saying like this is just stuff I was mucking around with, and I'm just going to put it out there. I think if it wasn't for the fact, there's two things here. Again, like if you're just like picking up the deluxe CD and all this is on one disc, or you're just streaming it, that's fine. But I had to go around for years as a teenager record collector, like buying these things. Because I wanted to hear these B-sides. And, you know, we were both like big B-side fans. And you'd find out really exciting gems, wouldn't you, on the B-side of singles.
It's new stuff.
Yeah, exactly. And I just remember, like, with these Tears for Fears singles, this era, just be like, And it's not like, if it was just one, and then I'd be like, oh, the Big Chair, that's a weird one. It would stick out in my mind. But there's too much. Like when I look at like the list of other songs from this era, Empire Building, The Marauders, The Conflict, Pharaohs, and as we've discussed, When in Love with Blind Man, just like a whole heap of disappointment awaiting you when you've spent your hard-earned £2 on a 7-inch single.
People forget. Yeah, I mean the same kind of thing is that. The B-sides were pretty important because they also, you know, this was a time when people, you know, you buy a single, whatever, that might be the first time you've heard this band. You don't want to buy the album. You can't stream the album. You can't hear it anywhere apart from the radio. And the B-side is giving you an insight into, you know, what their rest of the music might sound like. And it's not going to be like an album track because obviously they want you to buy the album to hear that stuff. It's normally stuff that's, been recorded as part of the album but hasn't made it. Or maybe it's like a live track so that you've got the song but you're hearing it live instead of the actual perfect produced version or whatever. But when it's something that's just like a bit throwaway and all this stuff, it's kind of a bit disrespectful, I think, of that time. Like nowadays, who gives a fuck? But at that time, it was it's a bit more of a big deal.
I respect that he's tried to showcase different sides of Tears for Fears, especially on this album as they sort of push into a more commercial spectrum. So he's obviously wanted to go, like, I am still this kind of innovative electronic music producer.
Yeah.
I see plenty of comments, actually, people online who single out some of these tracks I've just derided as being really interesting and, like, showing off this, like, total other angle. And probably, like, people that are more into, like, electronic and dance and things like this. And for me, I can't engage with any of it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% against it, but as you said, if it's something like In Love with the Blind Man or that stuff, where it's like it's just a worse version of the song, it's like release something else that's at least original. That, do you know what I mean? I don't know. It feels weird.
I think they worked on these songs like so long, it feels like they didn't actually have anything
extra to give.
No, not like proper finished songs.
Yeah.
So it's all these kind of scraps of things that they gave up on.
Yeah, fair enough. Cool. Well, that was Tears of Fears. Another insight there.
I reckon we could do another one on those. Because, like I said, there's like loads of different eras of the band where we could look for hits and shits.
So, yeah, pick from. Yeah, for sure. Okay, cool. Well, let's call it a day there. And thanks for listening to another Hit and Shit on Tears of Fears. More to come. Keep listening, watching, and whatever. We'll see you on the next one.
See you then, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Guys, thank you for listening to Oddcast Movies, Music and Gaming. If you want to get in touch with us or get a movie, album or game put on our list to discuss, then email us at oddcastoddballs@gmail.com or anewwinterpodcast@gmail.com. This is part of a New Winter Podcast Network, so head on over to anewwinter.net to check out our other shows. You can also follow us on Instagram @anewwinter, Twitter @anewwinter, and you can head on over to our Patreon page, patreon.com/anewwinter. Thanks for listening and see you again soon.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.